live from the Ghost Hunter Store. Brought to you by the Shadowlands, South Jersey Ghost Research, and the Ghost Hunter Store. Here's some paranormal straight talk with your hosts, Dave Giuliano and Marty Haynes.
Hey everybody, welcome to the show. This is Paranormal Straight Talk with me, Dave Giuliano, and
Marty Haynes. How are you, everybody? Hope everybody's Thanksgiving was good.
All right, we really had no plans for the show at all tonight. So, luckily, we had we were doing that review of how to interview witnesses off our client questionnaire. And I think we only got a third of a way through it. So we still had the final part, and people have been asking about it, actually, when we were going to complete it. Because actually it winds up being like a class you can take anytime because through our podcasts on podomatic.com. So the problem is I forget exactly where we left off. Somewhere in the 30s. But I'm going to go with, let's start with uncommon hot and cold spots. No, I'm pretty sure we covered that one. Problems with electrical plugs?
Yeah, the electrical.
I think that's
stuff.
Where we left off. All right, number 35. This is a questionnaire that it's one out of 51 questions. This is something we give all our clients before we even go out and visit them. We want to know as much information as we can. And regardless of how much time and effort we put into trying to get them to tell us as much as they possibly can, they're always going to forget something. They're going to need their memory jogged all the way down through. They're going to be withholding stuff either because of shyness, embarrassment, or intentionally withholding stuff.
Or some of the stuff they just completely forgotten because it happened a while ago, but we still need to know, you know, that it's a potential to happen again.
Right, they may not realize that it could be something related to overall, you know, what's going on in the house.
Right.
That's why it's important that they be as open and honest as possible. So that's after we get the questionnaire filled out, we go out and we visit them in person, normally in a team of at least two people, visit them in the house and the environment the stuff is occurring, and we'll review the whole questionnaire with them. That's when you're going to get the other nuggets that you wouldn't normally get. If you want to go back and review, they're available on our podcast page, and I think they're available off the ParaX page too, para-x.com, on the show archives. They should be up there too. It's reviewing the witness questionnaire, so you can get the first, like, it's broken up into two parts, but the first, like, 36 questions. And that way you'll have a whole complete series. This is something that I give in my two-day class, like a detail to how to go over this. And it's really geared to pick out a lot more detail. It's geared to give you flags, should there be any reason that you should have concerns that it might be more than just a human haunting. Oh, and it's also great for people who think they're going to pull a fast one on you and want to just play games, because they're probably not going to get through this questionnaire, and they're definitely not going to meet with you to get reviewed, because they realize it's too in-depth and too professional they're not going to pull off a...
And for the newer groups, it just going through the questionnaire, you can it gives you ideas of what you're looking for, too, you know?
Right, it's a very good learning tool. I review it with all our new people, mm-hmm. and it's an excellent teaching tool to teach them what to look for on an investigation and initially contacting the clients. So let's see what I was saying we were starting at the electrical stuff. Have there been any problems with electrical appliances? And we have in parentheses TV lights, appliances, kitchen appliances, doorbells. If so, what, where, and when? Now the what, where, and when is a given. We need to know what room, what time of day, you know, that kind of stuff. That's the stuff that they normally leave out.
Yeah, there's some kind of pattern to it.
Right, we're looking for a pattern. Mm-hmm. We're looking for time of day.
Hot spots, which rooms.
Right, all these things are crucial for your when you're going back and investigating. You need to know where the stuff's happening, when it's happening, so you can kind of focus your investigation on that. Spirits can manipulate electronics. I personally have witnessed a radio, a stereo come on mm-hmm. that was not plugged into the wall. I've seen TVs come on and off. I've had a telephone sitting right next to me that had the cord wrapped up all around it, and it was unplugged from the wall, and it was ringing.
Yeah, we had one on investigation once. the phone started ringing, and actually there was a message left, and the phone was unplugged from the wall.
So, I mean, the electronics, that's why those of you who watch people using certain pieces of equipment, like the ambient temperature deviation device now, or the ghost meter, or the K2, anything that's electronic, you see them using that to try to get spirits to answer.
The REM pods, yeah.
So, some circuits are easy for spirits to manipulate. A simple circuit, it doesn't take much knowledge for them to just use a static charge of some kind to interfere with that and cause a blinking light to go off in a pattern of yes, no.
Mm-hmm.
We've noticed that significantly now with that ambient temperature deviation device, which is available right now. It's only in the, it's in a MEL. It's in two different versions of the MEL meter. The MEL just has that, and it's in the MEL combo with the REM and that.
And the K2.
And the K2 has that in there.
Right.
But it's going to be coming out again as a solo unit. So it's a very cool tool. It's audible, visual recognition of temperature drops, so you don't even have to have your... It's a great tool other than the fact that we've noticed, and the manufacturers have confirmed they've been getting this from other people, that the other groups have reported spirits manipulating this.
And it's easy for them to manipulate because it's only a couple degrees, so they only have to put a lot of energy into it. They can just put a little bit of energy or pull a little bit of energy out of the air just to get it to drop just those couple degrees to start to interact, which is nice.
Right. So there's many different levels. I mean, this question seems like it's a very generic question about electrical appliances, but when you start digging into it, there's a lot of different ways it can go. And so the conversation we're just having right now, that's the kind of conversation you have with your witnesses and your clients during the prelim. You can tell them a little bit about that, because maybe that radio that comes on, whether it's plugged in or not, what station does it come on?
Right.
Does the station remind you of anybody in particular, maybe a relative? Like, is it a station you would never, ever be listening to? Like, for me, that would be country.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe, you know, a relative of mine was really into country, but it always comes up with the same song playing or something pattern that would, some pattern that would make me think of that person.
Right.
Now, that is exactly the situation that it happened to me on. It was always coming up with classical music at this lady's house.
Mm-hmm.
And her son was into classical music. No one else in the house was.
Okay.
And I said, well, let's put two and two together
there
here.
You go.
That's... Yeah, the chances of it being tuned, because they did use the stereo now and then, it would have never been left on a classical radio station.
Right, okay.
So for it to turn on without being plugged in is one thing on its own, but to be then playing the classical music station is a separate event now that ties in and points to one spirit.
Yeah, and that's the easiest way they can get in touch with you, you know? That's the easiest way to let you know who it is so you're not scared.
So that's, like... All the questions, no matter how benign they may seem, they're huge implications. Should you ask them right and continue to follow them up correctly? Follow up is key. Normally, on a regular case that seems to be what we would call like a Casper case, a normal, typical, you know, haunting, we might be there doing the interview for an hour or so. If it seems to be a little more in-depth, a little more tricky, maybe some more questionable things, some flags there, we may go into an hour or 2 hours. Because that's when you want to get the people talking. That's when they start remembering things. And, you know, again, it's more of a negative example, but we had a case recently where a little girl was being woken up by a man that was scaring her.
Mm-hmm.
And she said the man didn't want her parents to know about him. And, again, we still don't know. It's not conclusive what it is. It could be a relative and he didn't want them to know he was visiting their daughter, or, you know...
Maybe it's a relative they didn't get along with, or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, they're a strange relative,
mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until we were just chit-chatting later on that we jogged the woman's memory enough that she mentioned that this guy had knives, and he was showing the little girl knives, and that's how he was threatening her not to talk, was showing her the knives. Well, that puts a totally different spin on, and it kind of, maybe, hopefully it eliminates the relatives. Hopefully they didn't know exactly who it was.
Right.
But, I mean, now that becomes a flag issue because we have a spirit that's threatening a child using a weapon of some kind. That makes it totally different. So, you know, interacting, having those conversations and chit-chatting with the clients while you're reviewing the questionnaire is very important. As long as you realize that you're really almost interrogating them and they don't realize it. You're having a friendly conversation, but you're picking up all the details you know.
You go with the electric, back to the electric. People say that they're all of a sudden they're hearing very loud knocking. And they didn't put down there that they had any electrical issues, but then they remember that, oh yeah, the lights used to go in the kitchen. And they never, you know, they just go shut them off. Well, the knocking could be something followed through where they didn't acknowledge the spirit. So now...
Right.
Now they're knocking instead of turning on the lights and stuff.
Yeah, and you think, and that shows an escalation, escalation they weren't aware of, and now they are.
Right.
So the questioning is crucial. You don't want to go in blind. Even the way we send people in, only a few people know what's going on, but at least someone knows what's going on.
There's always at least one person that knows exactly what's going on in the building.
Yeah. Everybody else is going in blind because we don't want to contaminate them if they pick up any impressions or anything, but you need to know as much as you can so you know how to handle the case or if you can handle the case. There are some cases that are over everybody's head that you need to either get help on or refer out to someone else who's more experienced. And there's always someone more experienced than you.
Definitely.
So don't be afraid to get help. We still go and get help. You know, we still, you know, bounce it off of other people because there's people that have been doing this longer than us, too. So don't be afraid. It doesn't show, it's not a sign of weakness at all. It's a sign that
that's
you're
a, that's
your
a
head.
Sign of strength, yeah, that you, yeah. You're thinking this through, yeah, and not trying to hurt that client.
Now, the next question is a problem with plumbing, like leaks, flooding, sinks, toilet bowls, etc. Human spirits... I don't know what the reason is. I've never had anyone even come up with a theory. They love flushing the toilet. You know, I don't know if
it's... Turning the faucet on for you.
And turning the faucet on, too.
Yes.
But two of those things are very common. They happen. That would be a typical Casper case kind of activity. It can be very unnerving when you walk into a room and the spigot's going full blast, or you hear the toilet flush in the middle of the night.
But
and
that's
you know,
that's running water. That's someplace to get some energy from.
Like it could be something like that, you know. It's a mechanical thing, so it actually is going to take some force to turn some knobs.
Right.
I've never seen it happen. Like the knobs are always on.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the water's running, but the knobs off.
Right.
They are physically.
Yeah, they turn them.
They
man.
Are physically turning the knobs, but it's something that is very common. But that's a good theory about them wanting maybe to create the white noise or the energy or something that they can use
that they can draw off of. Yeah.
That, which means they're consciously aware of how to communicate in some levels, which is one of the theories out there. There's a theory that I know a lot of people that deeply work in EVPs have reported, I'm not sure if it was in Constantino's book or not, about the operators on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
Where they, once you get to a certain level, you start communicating with these spirits who seem to give you tips on how to communicate
that
better.
Work, yep.
And they're like the middleman between us and the other side, helping make the connection.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've heard that theory by not just Constantinus, but other people, you know, over the years. So that could be somebody, something along those lines, creating that white noise so they can...
Give them the opportunity, yeah.
To do some sort of speaking or, you know, the disembodied voice to EVP, whatever one it may be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the flip side of this, as most of the questions have the negative that we're looking for, too, it could be something, if it's the toilet overflowing...
Backing up,
or your sewer line always, you know, leaking or breaking... Any negative connotation with that kind of smell.
The foul smells from the bathroom or something that you're always getting that you can't explain.
And we're talking about stuff that either is completely unexplainable where they've had a plumber come out.
Right.
Maybe multiple repairs and they can't explain why it keeps happening. Things like that. I'm not talking, I know everyone's mind goes right away to Amy Vihar and the black ooze coming up out of the toilet.
Yeah,
no. No, we're not necessarily talking about that, you know, because that would, we'd have to have walls bleeding then too. That's mm-hmm. That's a whole other question. You know,
and that doesn't mean if you if you got the sewer line in the vent right outside your door and you're smelling these foul smells, that's where that smell comes from. So don't take that right away to be a negative either. I've had that.
Right. Now again, that's I don't like to say debunking because I don't like that word and I think people misuse it and misuse the whole concept.
No, it's looking for natural.
It's part of your investigation process.
Right.
You should be looking while you're investigating for natural causes, should there be any. It has nothing to do with debunking. It has to do with investigating.
Right.
Investigating comes up with the answer regardless of whether it's unexplainable or explainable. That's just, in a nutshell. But just be advised, if there's a lot of flooding or water in areas and water dripping in areas that there's no explanation for how the water got there. Like, we've had a couple cases, and I remember John Zaff was showing me photos one time of a but he called it water poltergeist, which it was actually almost raining. That's how much water was dripping in this one room. But there was no pipes It was a room with another. It was like a first floor room, so there was a second floor above it. There was no leaking anywhere they could find, and there was no pipes anywhere else.
Right.
So they had done everything. They'd had like people out to look, yet this room still dripped water inside. Then you're going beyond, you know, laws of physics, mm-hmm. and you're going into a whole different realm, possibly something negative that you're dealing with there. So that's, again, it's something you want to keep in mind when you're looking at all these things. The next question is, are any occupants having nightmares or trouble sleeping? I personally want to know what the nightmare is.
Right. If it's a reoccurring nightmare, same people, same thing, or, you know, whatever in it, then that's right there, that's a flag.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people who don't want to share that with us. I personally, to me, that's one of those questions that's, it's a make or break deal. If they're not feeling comfortable enough to tell me what's going on in the dream, that just makes me even more concerned about the dreams. Because spirits can contact us, you know, both human spirits and non-human spirits can manipulate us in a dream state and cause us to have very lucid dreams.
That's actually the easiest way to do it,
right?
Is to get into the dream state.
You're not going to be surprised or overwhelmed. You're in a totally different frame of mind.
You're nice and relaxed, so you're open. Yeah.
And if they're not willing to tell me what the topic or what's going on in the dreams, I'm not probably going to take the case, simply because they're not forthcoming about telling me about the dreams, which is going to be a key, obviously, if it's that scary.
Or that personal.
Then they're not telling me something else, too. And without complete openness and not being up front, we can't help them. So it'd be one of those cases where I explain that to them as nicely as possible, and then even have to be a little harsher about it, saying, look, this is a make or break. We can't help mm-hmm. you unless you know, let us know. And if they still want to stick to that, then that's one of the cases that we would walk away from. And I recommend that, because you don't know what you're getting into. Granted, this is a lot of unknown that we don't know what we're getting into, but we try to know as much as possible.
Well, they're open at that point, and you're going in open. So you have to be able to defend yourself from whatever their bad dreams are. Somebody's going to pick up on them.
Right. And it's a difference of going in to all cases. We're going into the unknown.
Right.
This is something where, you know, it borders on intentional deception, because they are withholding information intentionally from you, regardless of what their motives are. Even if it's a personal situation, we need to know what that is, because we need to know dynamics of what's going on. Otherwise, we can't help and we can't protect ourselves.
And that's really a trust factor between them and us, too. They have to trust us enough to let us that far in, as well as us trusting them.
Next question. Any occupants having nightmare... Or I'm sorry, that's the one we just did. Having physical contact? And if so, who, when, where, and what happened? Physical contact can be anything from, you know, pulling of the hair, a tap on the shoulder, to rape. And we've had every bit of it, everything in between, including both those examples, happen on various cases. So the as much information as you can. Now, here's an opportunity for you, for some people that are very afraid of what's going on in their house. This is one of the first opportunities you get, really, to help them, maybe even help the whole case, because it might be a simple misperception of what's happening.
Right.
Had many people come up and, you know, they say they're being attacked, physically attacked, but when it comes down to it, they've had their hair pulled or tapped on the shoulder, or hands put up like on their shoulders, and they felt like they were maybe about to be pushed. On the staircase, it seems to happen a lot, where they felt like a spirit was right behind them, so they felt like it was trying to push them down the stairs. Feeling like a spirit's trying to push you down the stairs and pushing you down the stairs is two different things. You know, I can stand behind you too, right behind you, and you might get the impression that I'm about to push you down the stairs. But I didn't, and that's what you have to go with.
Right.
You have to go with what's really happening. So there might be a reason why that spirit's coming up behind you on the stairs.
And if they were that close that many times, then, you know,
why didn't they
push you if they really wanted to?
So sometimes using the why didn't or being Captain Obvious and pointing out the obvious, I like to do it in like a humorous way to make it, you know, because one case we had, a lady was walking down the steps with laundry all the time, and that's when she felt, you know, the spirit coming up behind her and putting his hands on her shoulder. It's like, why didn't he just shove you? I mean, you had no balance whatsoever. You had, your arms were full. You couldn't catch yourself. You were going to go like head over feet mm-hmm. down the steps. You know, and she's looking at me like I'm crazy. But then you saw the light bulb go off that she's reported this happened multiple times. Why didn't he? And, or it just pushed her down the steps.
And was it holding her back so that she didn't fall because she had a heavy load in her arms?
Exactly. You maybe it was doing something like that. But we draw a lot of conclusions. And
the hair tugging, is it somebody, you know, is it somebody in the family that used to do that? And, you know, that's their personality trait. They would walk by and tug your hair.
Right. But it's because it's unnerving. It's physical contact is always unnerving, even the slightest little tap on the shoulder.
Sure, you don't see it coming, you know.
Yeah, I personally, when I know there's no one behind me and someone taps on my shoulder, I don't turn around to look.
No.
I know there's no one there. So it's, to me, it's not. I'm not that curious. You know, I tend to see the spirits anyway, so it's like it would be even more, you know, of a surprise to turn around and be someone there. It's like, just come around in front of me if you want my attention. Don't tap me on the shoulder. Don't be lazy about it. Just come around. Let me see you.
I've had that happen, though, but I've also gotten an EVP that says, excuse me, you know, along with it. So they were tapping me on the shoulder to get me to kind
of
slide
out of the way.
Let them through. So.
I can almost picture that a couple times that's happened to me. It's been on, like, staircases I've been standing on.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm in the way.
Yeah.
It was their nice, polite way of saying, hey, buddy, move. All right, let's see. If physical contact is escalating to where it is being where everybody would agree it's being an attack, whether it's inappropriate contact of a sexual nature or leaving bruises and scratches and stuff that you cannot be explained, that's a case now that you really need to be sure that's something you want to deal with and can deal with, or go and get help right away because these people are being physically hurt now. Not just physically, but psychologically too. So it's not one that you want to hesitate or take a shot at if you're really not sure. You want to, you know, get someone who's experienced or get some help at least, and to guide you along. Let's see. The next one is: are pets affected? Pets are great witnesses.
They absolutely are. Yes, I have my own pets that have witnessed things. And
well, you have the one. One of your birds says something to one of your spirits.
Well,
right?
he calls him by name, and nobody's ever told his name. When he first moved in, he started calling him by name. He tells him he says goodnight to him when he leaves, and you hear the bell ring on the door, so I know he's walking out the door. He'll ask him, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" Nobody's in the room, and I hear him talking, and that's something he'll ask me as I'm feeding him or whatever. What are you doing? Now what are you doing? And he'll do the same thing. And I've also had a bird knocked off his perch from the energy that went rushing through the room once. So
now I know that cats and dogs are. And I've heard horses too.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. So you add birds in there. That's four common animals that were around a lot that definitely seem to pick up on spirits. I've had some dogs that are very sensitive. I've had some other ones that aren't. I mean, it seems to depending on maybe the animal itself, not necessarily the breed, but the animal itself, just like humans. Some are more in touch with that. Some aren't.
I'd watch the spirit walk right over top of my dog, and the bird will say something. And the dog just looks, he's still sleeping. I'll be like, you didn't feel that? And he'll look at me like what? What did I miss?
Yep. So there's definitely degrees. But if there is an animal that's very sensitive and is reacting, I like to have them loose in the house while we do the investigation.
Yeah. Never tell them to lock up their animals. I mean, unless the animal is, aggressive or something.
Yeah, it's going to be dangerous or it's something that's going to be really disruptive to the case, where it's overexcited or something. But if it's something that can walk around, get used to everybody, sure, maybe you don't use your motion sensors, or you might sacrifice some of your gear that you can't use. But I'd rather focus on the animal, because I know if the animal starts reacting to something, I'm right on top of that. That's a perfect witness.
Mm-hmm.
Their eyesight, their smelling, their hearing, everything's beyond what we can see. If they're reacting to a corner or a room all of a sudden, I am right behind them with my equipment and looking to see if I can pick up on stuff too.
You're right, Kat. We just saw in the chat room, she said, perhaps they're just so used to it that they don't react to it anymore. And that's a very good possibility, but my dog has never reacted, so I'm pretty sure that he doesn't see anything. The birds, however, they don't get excited or they don't get upset about it, but they do, from time to time, talk to them.
See, my cat, Agatha, she's been in two buildings now. She's lived with me that have been haunted. So I know how her reaction was in the one, and I can almost tell if it's something that she's okay with.
Mm-hmm.
She'll be aware of it and watch it, but she won't react. If it's something she deems as a threat, she actually gets like either on top of me in a very odd posture, almost like a dog attack mode.
Okay.
Or if I'm sitting somewhere at my feet, she'll like sit on top of my foot, like as a protective mode, and that's when she's much more heightened. The ears are very, very straight up, and right. the eyes are, you know, completely wide open, black dots, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's definitely focused on something. So I can almost tell the degree of what she deems like a threat level almost.
The normal spirits in the house or a stranger right. that's just walking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do think they can get used to a certain level of mm-hmm. activity. Let's see. Has there been a problem with pests? Yes, unfortunately. We're talking about, like, you know, the infestation of flies.
Flies or...
Which, ironically, on a case we were
just... Grasshoppers or locusts or...
anything you would deem as a pest. Like, you know, rats, mouse, squirrels, raccoons, anything getting into the house. But you're looking for stuff that doesn't make sense. Because that happens to all of us. I mean, I live in the city in Philadelphia, so I know in the winter, the cat's going to find at least one, yeah, little tiny field mouse, mm-hmm. like Stuart Small, you know, whatever. You know, he's going to bring one of those little guys, or Stuart Little, whatever that movie was, going to bring one of those little guys up, because they come and they try to get in through the bricks during, right. you know, the cold weather.
Right.
But...
If it's normal for the house.
Right. The same thing with anything else, but... We were just encountering a house that one of the ones we were dealing with that there was fly strips hanging from every room. I mean, every single room in the house. And the fly strips were full. And during our preliminary interview there, mm-hmm. we were swatting some flies away. Now, it was a warm day, but those flies had been on the flypaper for a very long time. It turns out that they made an excuse saying it was like, dogs from the neighborhood, the smell wafted into the house, so that would attract the flies, which I really didn't buy to begin with.
No.
Later on, they were kind of embarrassed that we noticed the fly strips. So when they mentioned later on, again, through email, saying, why did you ask that question? We found out that they have this fly infestation where they have to have the fly strips in every single room all year long. Winter, summer, spring, windows closed, open. Times when there is no smell from the neighbor's yard wafting in.
Yeah, see, now that's a flag. That's
yeah,
something
and this was full. You know, they're like at least 2.5 feet or 2 feet worth of flypaper,
mm-hmm.
completely covered with flies on each side, plus and still flies flying around. So that would be something that qualified as an infestation.
Yeah, and as you do your walkthrough, you walk through and you take notice, is there anything that's attracting these flies in the house? And if you see nothing, then again, that's a flag that you want to, you know, make mention of or keep in the back of your mind.
Let's see, next question. Describe the first occurrence of the phenomena. We like to get them to tell us about the very, very first experience that they had in the location. This is more to jog the memory, because sometimes the first experience they're talking about is the first experience maybe when it got, it escalated, when it was a little more active than it was in the beginning.
Right.
Now they think back, well, you know what? Actually, a couple years ago, there was some stuff going on. And then they start telling you more and more. You find out that the activity really didn't start maybe 6 months ago. It actually started a year or more ago.
Right.
So it's more or less to give them a little push to remember something and really dig back into the memory.
And you want to know exactly what was going on at that point in the house, too. Was there some kind of change that was going on?
Right, because whenever the activity suddenly spikes or suddenly starts out of nowhere, nothing really starts out of nowhere. Something changed in the environment. We're always looking for that. Something that happened in the house. Someone new, someone moved in, moved out, you know, baby born, someone died. Doesn't have to be necessarily in the house with relatives or anything. But, or did they bring new objects into the house? They do something new to the house, new, you know, wallpaper, any kind of construction, anything at all, anything on the grounds. Because something happened to trigger a sudden spike or a sudden activity to start.
Right.
So that's what you're looking for. That's the piece of the puzzle that's going to help you figure out really what's going on. Without that, that's when we are flying blind, because that's part of what we're trying to figure out. If we do figure out what started the catalyst, sometimes it's
easier to kind of help control it or help contain it.
And especially for the people who want the stuff, the activity to stop. If it's something, say, it's a haunted object, well, when they brought this antique into the house, the activity started. Well, sure, then move the antique out to the garage, see if the activity stops. And if not, if it does, then get rid of it. Sell it, you know, have a yard sale. Good time for a yard sale.
If you don't like the activity, then you can't be too attached to that piece if that's where the problem is. You know, you want to move it on.
So always be looking for that, you know, that little
Sometimes clue. It's just a conversation. If you're doing construction on the house, you know, the spirits get a little upset that you're changing their house. Just, you know, explain to them what you're doing, and that usually calms it down, you know. Any of those little changes.
The next group is kind of like all related to that other question. Again, trying to jog the memory. What time was the first occurrence of the phenomena? What was the witness reaction? Were there any other witnesses during the first event? Now, again, it's a memory thing, but the time thing, when was the time of the first event? Has it remained consistent? Is the time, or now, is it all the time it's happening, but it used to be only at one time or one time range? It only used to happen late at night. Now it happens earlier in the evening, too, or it's moved just earlier in the evening. It gives you a range to look for any kind of movement or shift in any of the activity.
Well, the shift in the activity and the shift in their personal lives, too.
Right.
You know, if it's happening earlier in the day, why is it happening earlier in the day? Is it because you're home and
right,
you weren't
exactly.
home before?
Right, you were in that. Now you're a different job, laid off, something like that. So now that's why you're noticing a different time, too.
Right.
Witnesses, that's important, too. In most cases, there aren't multiple witnesses to same events.
Right.
That's usually a strong spirit that's able to manifest in front of a bunch of people. Typically, there might be multiple witnesses of various things happening in the house, but it's rare that you have a whole house full of people that's all experiencing something.
Seeing it all at the same time.
And seeing it all at the same
time.
They
may see it, you know,
here and there.
Here and there, where, you know, one person sees it one day and another person sees it another day, but for all of you to see it at the same time, that's a very strong spirit.
Anything that's multiple people seeing things. The more people that are seeing things and experiencing things, and the more people that are seeing them at the same time.
And the combination of people that are there. Is it all family at the same time that it happens, or is it...
Yeah, or just neighbors, right. friends, you know, all that. Again, it gives you an idea. The more that it's people outside the family that are all seeing it at the same time, the more that shows even strength. Because if it's all family at the same time, because there's relations there, they could all be mm-hmm. have that heightened sensitivity they're just unaware of.
Or it could be a family member coming in, just being that much stronger because you're all there together.
True, and they're getting the bump mm-hmm. from all the family being together. That's
right.
giving them enough energy to manifest. What the reaction was too. It's interesting to note. Just, you know, how did they react? Were they didn't really believe what they were saying? So it was surprise, shock, fear, anything. And how has that reaction now changed over time?
Right.
A lot of times you'll see people react, they just seemed out, they were just surprised by it. Then they went on the internet, they read, and they found their way to horrible pages that tell you all everything's the devil, and now they're terrified, but it's still the same activity that they witnessed in the very beginning.
And that's why the activity heightened, because they're putting that much more energy into it.
Right, because fear is a great source of energy. Any negative emotion, or even positive emotions, any high emotion.
Right.
It's down to science. Your body's you're moving faster. You got more energy flowing. You're creating more energy for a spirit to feed off of and manifest, or because you're just putting it out there for them. So actually, the worst thing when people are scared and want the activity to stop, the hardest thing to do is get them to stop being scared, because they're actually contributing to the activity increasing and staying, or at least staying steady, because they're a constant source of fuel
right.
for the
or
activity.
Did they start investigating their own house and start doing EVPs and stuff, which will actually feed it that much more?
Which is a no-no. We don't investigate our own houses, as fun as it may sound, because you are going to get a question or answered on an EVP that you're not going to like the answer to. And the reason why you're not going to like it is because you're going to put the context to it. It may say, get out. And then you're going to picture yourself being the priest in the Amityville Horror when he hears that voice on the steps and running out of the house. Or one of the other movies you've watched, when really it didn't tell you who to get out or what to get out of, or you're getting us two words that you put the context to it.
Get out a deck of cards.
Yeah, get out a deck of cards, want to play poker, mm-hmm. and then when you're running out of the house screaming, they're like, hey, what about the game of cards?
Yeah, where'd you go?
What's going on? Right? Because, you know, that's how we're geared with the way modern media kind of portrays this stuff, and our flight and fight. You know, factor kicks in too. Something that if fear kicks in, you can't fight it, so you run.
Run, right.
But we're putting that stuff together. We're not making, you know, we're making the conclusions. We're not getting them from the EVPs. Now, it's easy to tell a client that or a witness that you're dealing with, and calm them down. When it's in your own house, that sticks in the back of your head, and you're not going to buy your own psychobabble.
Sure, and you're the one that's going to go lay in your room at night with the lights off and then start to hear all the, you know, all the bumps and scrapes and whatever and noises in the house.
And it definitely is. We've had many people that we tried to talk out of buying equipment here, where they come in the store and they want to buy an EVP recorder or something. And when we can't talk them out, we'll normally give them a card.
Give them a card.
Just said you're probably going to be calling us in a month or two. Yeah, and I'd say that happens quite a bit. You know,
I'd say more than 50%. Yeah,
this one case in particular. It was almost a month to the day when we got the call saying, "Uh-oh."
Yeah, I think we screwed up.
Yeah, they heard a little bit more than they wanted to hear, and you know, next thing you know, that now that they're not a customer, they're a client.
Well, and the activity bumped up on them, which frightened them too, because they were talking to people and they were. The spirits, when you start talking to them, they're going to talk back to you whenever they choose to, not when you choose to. It's whenever they can get to you, when you're most relaxed, or when, you know, whenever you put out the most energy. So at night when you're just getting off to sleep is when they're going to try and talk to you the most. And you know, after a while, that's going to get old.
Now, we have a little 30-second message here to play before I forget, because we get talking and then we run out of time. So while I'm thinking of it, we're just going to take a couple seconds out here for commercial break.
Don't miss your chance to go on a live ghost hunt with Ghost Hunt Weekends and the stars of Ghost Hunters International and Paranormal State. Join Chip Coffee and Joe Chin live from the Rhodes Hall Museum in Atlanta, Georgia, January, Friday the 13th, for autographs, photos, psychic readings, and a live ghost hunt. Be sure not to miss Ghost Hunt Weekends. Call 1-800-604-9101 or find us on the web at ghosthuntweekends.com.
All right, we're back. Let me move the microphone back to me again. All right, let's see. Where did we leave off at? How often does the phenomena occur? Here we're looking for just patterns.
Patterns, yeah. Most of what you're looking for are patterns. So this is the biggest thing. This is the question you're going to ask to really get that final what is the pattern?
And some people will say, well, you know, it comes in spurts, or we're going to call back after we've done, you know, the questionnaire and the preliminary visit. Well, the activity stops, so we really don't need you out. There are breaks and pauses in activity. In the house I grew up in, it actually stopped for almost, it was just almost shy of 2 years. Mm-hmm. But we would go for months where it was every day, every night, and then you'd have a break 1 or 2 weeks, nothing.
Right.
So, I mean, it's common to have it ebb and flow. I think it's more uncommon, actually, to have something
constant.
That's every single day, constantly every day, without any break.
Yeah.
We don't actually find that too much. And usually it's a situation that has escalated because people have fed into it, or we're dealing with something more than just the typical Casper.
Spirit,
yeah. Or Native American spirits, too. They mm-hmm. tend to, when they get stirred up and they get on a tear, they tend to go nonstop, too.
Well, they know where to draw the energy from, so they can pull it out of the earth and just run with it.
They're definitely more in tune with the spirit side of things.
Yes.
They understand that much better than we do.
Yeah. You know, does it happen once a year? Is it a certain event that happened at that time? Is it a birthday or the death of someone, or, you know, just something of that nature? Is it a holiday? When it starts to pick up, when the energy starts to pick up. I mean,
we'll get a lot of people right now contacting us.
Right now,
Christmas.
We have a ton of people right now that are contacting between the holidays. This is the best time especially for family to show up and want to, you know, let them know that, you know, let you know that they're around. So, and right now the veil is closer at this time of the year than it ever is. So this is when the energy is at the height. You got the cool air that's putting out that static energy that they can pull off of, and all the family that's around, and everybody's, you know, running around doing shopping and stuff, so they got all that excess energy that they're spewing. So it's just this is the height of the season right now, actually.
And this will be stuff that it may only happen a few times. Maybe it's Christmas,
mm-hmm.
then it's a birthday in April,
right.
Something like that. And it's patterns that they might not notice, but once you they fill out the questionnaire and you're doing the interview and you're being thorough, you suddenly figure out the pattern.
Start to pick up, yeah.
And it's like you can, and then you can predict when the next activity is, and you're taking the unknown factor out of it.
Right.
Because then you're definitely leading towards that it's more than likely a relative of some kind. Mm-hmm. You know,
or even if it's not a relative, if it's someone from that owned the property. But again,
true.
It's that there's that anniversary of something that happened then that the activity spiking. So, but at least it lets the people know that, okay, in August, activity's going to start kicking up, so we're just going to, you know, do what we need to do and set boundaries or add more positive energy to the house to calm it down. And just teaching them that just kind of helps immensely.
Exactly. Okay, four questions left here. Do any of the occupants feel threatened or feel the phenomena is threatening? If so, who and why? Very important question, obviously. You want to know why they feel threatened. Again, it may be misinterpretation of what's actually happening, down to mother or father parental instincts. A lot of people start a protection mode kicks in.
Right.
There might be something that just is, you know, obviously it's scary and induces fear. You know, the kids may be oblivious to it, or the kids may be seeing things.
Well, they might be seeing it and not really upset over it, but the parents are.
Sure. Now they're creating the fear. And they'll put in there, they feel it's threatening because they have no way of protecting their kids from right. something they can't see.
Or sometimes it's just the opposite, where the kids are afraid because, again, it's that what we're taught all growing up, that's the stranger in the house.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, so when that's a flag that we get a lot, where people, the kids screaming uncontrollably, woken up at night, looking in the corner of the room. And one of my first questions is, how does the child react to the strangers normally?
Right.
Because if he's normally, say a real stranger walked into that room in the middle of the night and just stood there, would he cry and scream like that? Because that may be exactly what he's seeing.
Right.
And we can't, anybody, if it's, you know, a small child, anyone he hasn't met yet, any relative or any deceased relative that he never met, is a stranger.
He's a stranger, right.
So that could be the natural reaction. So you have to keep that in mind too. Each person's level of threatening, you know, or what is threatening is different too. I mean, how threatened do you feel? Is there a for sale sign in the front yard? Are they living in a motel right now?
Right.
Are they staying at relatives? Are they all sleeping in the same room?
Mm-hmm.
That indicates even more whether they're even telling the truth and how, because sometimes people will put on here they're not really threatened, they're just curious.
But then you see the blow up bed in the middle of the living room with everybody's pillows and blankets, then you know that there's more to it.
Right, and then you go back to some other questions where they've lived there for 10 years, but they just called the parish priest to come out and bless it.
Yeah.
You know, all little things that the BS meter goes off where they're not willing to tell you that they are afraid, but they are more than just concerned. So it's something for you to reflect back on when you're doing the overall interview. What do the occupants believe is happening? Supernatural, natural, unsure, etc. We're trying to get a consensus of the group. Like, you know, the two kids think it's supernatural, mom is unsure, and dad thinks it's, you know, their imagination. Then we know kind of what we're dealing with. We're
right.
not dealing with a unified family that all believes everything is the same thing. With a normal, typical haunting, that's not necessarily an issue. But when you get to a haunting where the people are generally afraid, or you're getting a stronger spirit or a more provocative spirit that's doing stuff that's you know, either not very nice and being, you know, a nuisance, a legitimate nuisance, all the way to getting down to the more negative stuff, you need a more unified family.
Yeah, you can't have just that one person scared to death and the other people going, well, you know, I'm not sure, but we called you just to make them happy. You know, you
right.
can't have that.
Because especially when you're dealing with the negative stuff, we have to have everybody on board to help. One person that's standing out, then you have to assess, why is that one person standing out? Are they being affected somehow? Are they being oppressed? Is there something that's spirits doing to them that's making them be the one sore thumb that's putting the stick in the spokes, basically, and stirring the pot?
The spirit's not showing himself to that person just to keep that from happening.
Yeah, or they're not showing themselves, but then they're manipulating that person,
right.
Manipulating the emotions, making them... spirits can affect your perception of things. They can make you see events differently than what are actually happening. So I mean, there's many examples of this. Unfortunately, the examples I have off the top of my head are exactly movies that we use as reference, like Amityville Horror. And when the family's running out of the house, the Amityville Horror, for instance, the door shatters into a million pieces, the staircase banister rips off. Yet you can go there, and there's film of them afterwards, people doing investigations there afterwards and photos. The front door's intact,
right.
And the banister is still intact, right. Too. That's not saying that that whole family did not see those things shatter and splinter into a million pieces. They did. That was the perception that was mirrored, like put on top of them, like, almost like a fog that they saw, and that was something the spirit was projecting them to see.
Their own little video. Yeah.
Yeah. It's their own personal little video.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that occurs quite a lot, actually, especially when you're dealing with more intelligent spirits, ones that are more, you know, well-versed in how to manipulate things, and when you're dealing with the non-human type spirits, you know, both good and bad, they can, any of them can do the, you know, manipulation of that.
Make you see exactly what they want.
Right, and you're not aware of that you'd be willing to bet that what you saw was real when challenged with someone else's saying it didn't. So you got two people now thinking each other's crazy,
right.
And it's easy to ferment, you know, turmoil in the house that way. So that's one good way for, especially for the darker stuff, to
divide and conquer.
Exactly, wreak havoc in the house and create the chaos that they're trying to sow amongst us. The next question: do all occupants agree on what is happening? Do any of them think it's nonsense or not happening? Again, just a rewording of the question before it, but being even more forthcoming because and stronger wording, where we use the word: does anyone think it's nonsense? Does anyone not believe it's happening at all? That way, if they didn't understand the first way we put it, the second way we're definitely going to know, because now, and especially if they put someone's thinking this is total nonsense or BS, and the events are really in your face events to the other people, then we have to look at it completely differently, because it might be something that's definitely trying to manipulate and toy with the family on a not so friendly way. It's playing mind games for a reason. Mm-hmm. That could still be a human spirit, but it's more of a malicious one intending to cause problems in the family.
Sure, and as you're trying to work with the situation and make the situation better, if those people are not on board to help, then the situation's not going to get better very easy.
It's all a key. It's unity. Yeah, it's that whole thing that, you know, divided we fall, mm-hmm. United we stand. So without that unity, it's really hard to help a family. That's because now they are creating... the negativity is being created in the house. So even if it wasn't something that was negative before, because of the law of attraction, like attracts like, they could actually be drawing in something or getting the attention of other spirits in the area that may be more malicious or even negative or mm-hmm. non-human. So
the anxiety, the anger from, yep, mm-hmm. So the animosities.
All that factors in. So now you're bait. You're like chumming the waters and asking for something else to happen. So the sooner you can cut that off, and sometimes I even will explain that to people, that you need to, this is why you need to get together.
Right.
And at the very least, not do stuff detrimental to calling the other person crazy and doing the other stuff. At least have some faith that they're not nuts and they might be actually experiencing this stuff, because you don't want to do anything that we could draw in more. Because you don't want to suddenly find out that they were right in a bad way. Yeah, that's a hell of a way to find out that, oops, because then you're the one that actually brought the stuff in because of the way you were being the disbeliever. So there's a polite way to not believe in what's happening, but at least respect the people that are, you know, experiencing this stuff.
Right.
And that goes with us investigators, too. I mean, I find that a lot of people aren't necessarily very respectful of the people. We deal with a lot of people. We deal with the gamut of society. You know, there are some people that may not be people you would like to hang out with in real life, or people that you wouldn't normally talk to, but you're kind of put in that situation. You know, we've been at homes that are immaculate to homes that are filthy.
Mm-hmm.
What I tell people is, you know, don't judge. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can't judge. That's a whole other factor. Unless it's related to the paranormal, you got to kind of put that aside, because you want to help people without bias.
Right.
And even the same thing with belief systems. You don't want to impose yours upon people, but you don't want to be judgmental about theirs.
Well, you really can't, because if you try to oppose yours, then they don't have faith in it. It doesn't help them any.
Right.
So,
but going in and being disrespectful to their belief system, because you feel yours is superior, even though you might not say it, sometimes actions show up very clearly in what you do, that you're demeaning, you know, what their belief system is.
Yeah.
Especially if they have icons around the house or any kind of religious things that you might find in your belief system might be offensive, but to theirs it's not. So you have to, you know, you have to suck that up and, you know, it's your game face, basically, or your poker face. You gotta be aware that you don't want to be the cause of bringing anything or stirring up anything in the house too. Remember that, you know, the golden rule, it's you get to go home and they have to stay and deal with anything that you may have caused to occur in the house too. Let's see, the final question, this is the goal. Everything you do in the investigation, in your follow-up with the clients, in your handling of the case, and in presenting your evidence, every single thing you do relates back to this final question. What would you like to see accomplished from our assistance? That's what you want to know. What do they want out of this? They want more information? Do they want to know they don't need to be afraid? That they're not crazy? I mean, there's a lot of different things people will put here. But that is your goal. However many times you have to go out to their house, even if it means just to sit and talk, however many times you call them, the line of communication you put together for them. Everything and every interaction you do should go back to this last question, because that's what they called you for. If you're going to a house for any other reason, then you are not doing the people a service. You're doing them a disservice, and you probably shouldn't be going to private houses to begin with, because you're putting yourself first, and because you have an opportunity to go in a place that's reported haunting.
Yeah.
And that's
to come
not
out
what
with
this
evidence.
That's
it's not about,
what about.
It's not about evidence.
Right. If people invite you into their house because they want to allow you to collect evidence, and they're aware from the get-go that you're just going in to collect evidence scientifically or whatever method you use, and you are not, you know, you'll share that with them, but you are not trying to, you know, get to the goal that they would like, or you're not going to try to help them with anything else they may want, like more understanding or who is it, or any other questions they have. You're strictly in there for the evidence collection and the scientific, basically, proof of life after death. You need to let them know that up front.
And good luck with that.
Well, that's a whole other option. I personally don't believe in my lifetime that people will be able to prove conclusively without a doubt that there's life after death. And to be honest with you, someone who uses all the equipment and everything, none of us use the scientific method, because it's impossible to do in an environment that's always changing in someone's house.
I've heard too many groups say, you know, that's all we deal with is the scientific and the equipment. And then I listen to them say, well, where do you feel we should go? Right. Keyword, where do you feel we should go?
Right. And if they hear things, or if they're drawn to an area, well, they ignore that, because that's not scientific.
But they follow it. But they do follow it.
Right. Where's their control set? Because you really need to build a house identical on the same property and have the same people in it with the same exact stuff as a control environment, which is key to the scientific method. And that's why no one follows the scientific method in what we do in field research anyway. Possible to do stuff, experiments in this field with equipment in a setting that you can use it, but not in private houses. That's why that kind of approach is really not meant to be in a private house, unless, like I said, the people are fully aware up front that's what you're doing and they're offering their home for research.
Right.
We've had people do that for us that have offered themselves, you know, offered their house up for research, and we've taken advantage of that, but, you know, they've known from the start what it was.
Yeah.
That's it in a nutshell. That's the whole, that's the questionnaire. If anyone would like a copy of this, you can get a hold of us at hauntedhelp.org. That's the South Jersey Ghost Research website, through the Ghost Hunter Store. Me and Marty are available through that. Off the Paranormal Straight Talk website for the radio show, you can get me and Marty there.
Through the Facebook pages.
The Facebook pages for all three of those. We'd be happy to email you. We've shared this questionnaire with groups for years, and we're constantly modifying it. It started out at 40-something questions. We're up to 51 now.
Yeah, this one was just modified, last year?
Last year, yeah. Mm-hmm. We added two questions to it and changed some wording. So if you need a copy, just email us now. We'll be happy to send it out to you. Also, it's in my book, too. I go, some of the explanations that we've just gone over, a version of the questionnaires is in Ghost Research 101 and with the explanations in there, too. So if it's something you need to have something you can carry around or fall back on to read, I still reference it when I'm using for the classes, when I give mm-hmm. classes. It's easier for me to read off that so I don't forget anything and leave anything out. Next week, I believe we have Jeff Ballinger as a guest.
Yes.
So yes. Tune in on December 2nd. Until then, be safe out there, and we're going to leave you with some music as we head out. Take care, everybody.
Have a good weekend.
Ooh, ooh.